gilt ernst.
Hallo, okay, super, gut. Hi and welcome everyone. So, about tonight's evening that's called Künstliche Intelligenz or Artificial Intelligence, Hope or Hype. ChatGPT's consumer introduction has forced AI into the media, academic, and regulatory spotlight. Self-proclaimed security experts warn of an apocalypse. Privacy activists label it as marketing hype, and investors are rubbing their hands together. What is so intriguing about AI? How does it work? What are its potentials and limitations? And what role should Switzerland embrace as the world begins to govern AI? We're very excited to be here tonight, where we will hear from our special guest, Dr. Maria Grazia Giuffreda, from the Swiss National Supercomputing Center. My name is Roberta Fischli, this is Daniel Donac, and together we will host tonight's event on AI. As you might have noticed, we host this evening in English. Our guest is from Ticino, and she feels more comfortable giving this talk in English. And since this topic is so international, we figured it can't hurt to try something new.
All right.
So, many things are new, but a few things stay the same in this format. So that's also how the evening will go. So it's about 1 hour, which we also record and live stream. So whenever you're asking questions, you're free to ask questions, but be aware this will be recorded and saved in the internet forever. But you can't be seen, so the cameras are mounted and placed in a way that no person from the audience should ever be seen.
Just us.
Yes. So we will have an introduction and then we will discuss the topic after the 1 hour where we say bye to our guests from live stream and the recording. We can keep talk here casually. The bar will open again and we can enjoy ourselves and of course also keep talking with the evening. That is the topic. So also still the same are the three partners. They are very loyal, even though I try to would like to thank them and mention them. So first of all, there is Karl der Große, so which is the actual building we are in now. Then we have a media partnership with WOTS. So people which are physically present have the opportunity to take a WOTS home and read on their on the train ride, tram ride, whatever, a free example. And last but not least, I would like to thank the Video Operations Center from Chaos Computer Club. Without them, so no live stream is possible, so they provide us with the infrastructure, basically the server structure infrastructure for the recording and the live streaming. So, but now, where is our guest and what is all about her? Please, Roberta, tell us.
Okay, so I met Maria Grazia this summer when we both participated in a science communication boot camp hosted by SwissNext in San Francisco. And I very much remember her shock reaction when she told us that she was working for this National Supercomputing Center and that Switzerland was building this national AI infrastructure. And most of us were just like, what? We've never heard of this. So I'm extremely excited that she will be here tonight and tell us more about AI, its origins, the future, and also what it all is about when it comes to Switzerland's role in this new AI-governed world. But first, let me tell you a bit more about our speaker. So Maria Grazia is Associate Director at the Swiss National Supercomputing Center in Lugano. She studied computational chemistry in Belgium, where she received her PhD in 2001. After that, she was a postdoc at ETH Zurich in the computer-aided chemistry group. In 2006, Maria Grazia started to work at the Swiss National Supercomputing Center as a user and application support specialist. In 2013, she became associate director of the user program and in charge of the user engagement and support unit as well as the account management for the paying customers. And since 2021, she's responsible for and coordinates the strategic roadmaps of the center. Apart from that, Maria Grazia is also in charge of the national calls for proposals and the review process for the selection of the scientific project and the distribution of compute and data resources. And she's responsible for the communication with the user community and outreach. On top of that, Maria Grazia loves to read, travel, writing, and the mandatory leisure activity for everybody who's Swiss, and that's hiking. So, thank you again for being here tonight, Maria Grazia, and we are excited to hear from you.
Well, being here is relative. Maybe you also want to say something. Can you hear us? We can see you at least. You had a lot of fun when hearing your introduction. I hope it wasn't wrong.
Thank you very much. No, it was perfect. Thank you. And thank you also for allowing this evening to be in English rather than German.
Yes, we wish that we would have you here in person. Maria Grazia had to go to Paris for a really important appointment last minute. So she pre-recorded her talk and will join us live again after her presentation.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you. But where is Switzerland positioned in this AI initiative? Well, the Swiss federal...
This looks better.
But where is Switzerland positioned in this AI initiative?
What's wrong? Oh.
But where is Switzerland positioned in this AI initiative? Good evening, and thank you very much for inviting me to this evening where we are going to talk about the künstliche Intelligenz opening order hype. What I'm going to do in the next few minutes is to give you an overview of what I believe is artificial intelligence, how it works, a little bit of history, AI today, the future of AI, and then what comes next. What is artificial intelligence? Well, I must say that artificial intelligence is a relatively young discipline, especially if you compare it with physics, chemistry, and the very well-known scientific disciplines, because in our understanding of the artificial intelligence is about 60 years old. This is basically a set of sciences, theories, and technologies that basically are aiming to imitate the cognitive abilities of humans, and also their abilities to making decisions. So pretty much what we are trying to do is teach computers to perform certain tasks, to make choices following rules and patterns, and in the end behave like the human brain. But how does AI work? Actually, the AI is only a complex set of equations or algorithms that is known as neural networks, where you have a lot of parameters, thousands, millions, and sometimes you can even have billions of parameters that need to be adjusted in a process that is called machine learning. And why do you need to adjust these parameters? Because the ultimate goal is that you get reliable answer for a large set of input data where you know your output. So basically everybody knows the story about the cookie, the muffins and the dogs. So your input data might be actually images and every pixel of your images, and then your output would be whether you see a cookies or a dog. there is no magic. I mean, this has to be clear. There is no magic behind artificial intelligence. There is just an enormous computational effort to try to find the best parameters for the machine to give always reliable answer to a certain set of problems. This is nothing that, in my personal opinion, this is nothing than the trial and error approach, with that you try just to make it smarter and cleverer with certain mathematical approaches so that it is actually less random. So in the beginning, it was cybernetics. Actually, this was cybernetics was an attempt of unify mathematical theory, electronics, and automation. So this was an interdisciplinary field where they were studying systems, controls, communication, in many things, animals, machines, organization. And the first scientist that was actually talking about cybernetics was Norbert Wiener in his book Cybernetics of Control and Communication in the Animal and the Machine. And actually, cybernetics come from a Greek word that is used, is very common nowadays, because there are new tools called Kubernetes. And in the word is exactly Kubernetes, which means guide, steerman, exactly to give this idea of control and regulations. But it was actually later on, a few years later, then a group of scientists led by John McCarthy came out with these terms artificial intelligence, because they had to write a proposal for a conference and they used these new terms. Some rumors, but I don't have scientific confirmation about this, said that John McCarthy came with artificial intelligence because he simply didn't want to use the terms cybernetics. But actually, we need to thank John von Neumann and Alan Turing that they did not come up with the terms artificial intelligence, but they actually came with a technology that is behind the artificial intelligence. So basically, these two very great scientists formalized and finalized the architecture of contemporary computers, and they actually proved that this machine could do, was able of executing what it was programmed for. And then it was in 1950 that Alan Turing was writing this computing machinery and intelligence article, where he was actually putting together for the very first time the words intelligence with computers. And he was describing an imitation game where actually the human should have been able to distinguish whether he was talking with a human or with a machine. And despite the controversy about this paper and about Turing, it was the very first time that we started to discuss what were the boundaries between computers and humans. But where are we today? Now, in the next couple of slides, I'm going to flood you with a number of examples that simply show you that we are living in a world where artificial intelligence is actually a very important part of it. I'm not sure how many of us would be happy to go back to the times where all what I'm going to present did not exist. What about the virtual assistants, Siri, Alexa, Google Assistant? Assistants. These are simply assistants that use artificial intelligence to understand and then respond to our voice commands. In this picture, this is how Siri looked like in the Big Bang Theory, if any of you is a fan of it, where actually the Kutrapali fell in love with her. But what about search engines? We all know Google, Safari, Bing, Yahoo, and all the things that came before that. They are using artificial intelligence algorithm to actually answer our search. Recommendation system. Why do you think that when you switch on Netflix or Amazon, you are immediately flooded with recommendations to your liking? So basically, they are artificial intelligence algorithms that look at our past behavior and come up and our preferences and come up with similar suggestions. Autonomous vehicle. There is no car anymore, or maybe there are still some very old one driving around, perhaps not in Switzerland. We have artificial intelligence in our car. When we are had to drive, to park and things like this. I was recently in San Francisco and there are these little cars without driving or driver driving around the city, and you can book them as because they are available as a taxi cab. Also, the drone business is progressing very, very fast. Very recently, I was at a talk where they were presenting the results of a drone that was for the very first time faster than a human driven drone, of course, in a controlled environment. But what about manufacturing and robotics? You know that in the industry, they have automated a lot of things. And this automation is nothing else than the result of AI. Also, we want what we call our smart homes, where we control whether the windows are closed, whether the doors are closed, how much, whether devices are switched off. And this is all artificial intelligence. Healthcare, in medicine, they are already using artificial intelligence to assist with medical imaging analysis or drug discovery. Also in the personalized treatment. What about the energy? I mean, we all know that AI helps optimize energy consumption, optimize the grid management, the prediction of the maintenance in the energy sector. So AI is already there. And even in agriculture, they are starting to use what they call precision agriculture, optimizing crop yields, and also they are monitoring livestock. Again, even in the environmental monitoring, we received a lot of data from satellites, sensor, and the AI helps us monitor the environmental changes, help us understanding the climate patterns, which are all very important to our survival. In cybersecurity, AI helps us to detect and prevent security threats, to identify patterns, anomaly. In finance, credit cards, risk assessment, there are algorithms for trading, there are algorithms for fraud detections. And who has not used at least once this chat box or language translator? How happy are we that we can go in Japan, even if we don't speak Japanese, in very rural places, and we can communicate with these people by using Google Translate, which translates in real time in the language. Maybe not in perfectly, but still good enough to allow communication. So with this, I am just saying that despite all the hype and all the fears, we are living since decades in a world that it is AI driven. But what is the future of AI? I was very recently in a one-day event co-organized by the AI Center of Etihad Zurich, and actually some of these things were presented and discussed there. The future of AI certainly is generative AI, and up to now, AI applications were always using what they called predictive AI. So basically, you make prediction and provide inside based on existing data, and you do not generate new content. With this AI, generative AI, actually what we are doing is teaching the machine to create, and by teaching the machine is actually learning to create a new fresh output, and that are coming from learned training data. And basically, example are the AI generated text, and now you can have ChatGPT that generates text for you, or generate new images. So from human description, language description, AI generate new pictures, or we have generated speech. Even now you have AI voices that can speak and can translate in many languages, and can simulate several accents, or AI generated videos. So generative AI is the direction that AI has now taken. Another one is the multimodal AI models. So basically, the models, this new AI idea is to train models to discover relationship between different types of modalities. And different types of modalities could be text, images, video, audios. So the idea is to be able to combine all these models to have a better picture, to have a more refined picture. And this could be very, very useful, for example, in medicine, where we could, where actually doctor or the healthcare personnel, professionals could actually understand better what's going on and also come up with better predictions. Another aspect of the AI that we need to deal with, because it is here, this is what it is the democratization. Basically, democratization means that AI is available and accessible to everybody. We all know that AI, that to access the tool of AI, you just need a browser. This is these tools are very user friendly. You don't need any special training to use these tools, and they are actually quite inexpensive. Yes, it's true, from some of them you have to pay, but usually the financial investment is minimal that the majority of people can afford if they want. So AI has a lot of implication. This democratization of AI has a lot of implication and impact on individuals, on business, but ultimately on our entire society. Another aspect that is very dear, and I think it's also the cause of very, very heated sometimes discussion, is the workplace AI. It is absolutely true that once you adopt AI in a workplace, you are going to, of course, improve processes, productivity, incomes, and of course, this will have an impact on replacing jobs, but also, and I'm pretty convinced of this, creating new jobs. So what is going to happen, and is already maybe started to happen, is that certain skills will no longer be useful, and then we are in need of new skills. So there will be job disappearing, but certainly new jobs appearing. So workforce will need to acquire new skills to adapt, to change. And the new skills might be as exotic as analytical judgment, emotional intelligence, creativity, critical thinking. So basically what I'm trying to say is none of us has lived an industrial revolution, but we have certainly studied in school, and we don't even know basically what were the jobs that these people had before the industrialization. But I'm pretty sure that we would not want to go back to do those kind of jobs. So of course the generations that lives the transition will suffer, but new jobs will certainly be created if people are willing also to acquire new skills, there is plenty of opportunities out there. And because AI has many aspects that make it more efficient than a human being, is scalable. So AI can be more accurate than the human, than compared to human. AI can perform a lot of monotonous tasks and freeing the human resources for more challenging tasks. And of course, AI can be also faster than human beings. But if we accept all this, there might be a new world opening up where humans have to be used for what they are good at: thinking, taking difficult decisions, navigate very complex situations. I'm just giving you some very short, small examples. In healthcare, AI-powered robotic process automation could be extremely relevant if this will reduce reduce the effort of the personnel, because they will perform the tasks like data entry, scheduling, administrative process, and this will have an impact of reducing human error, better workflows, and of course having more time to ensure more accurate patient treatment. Also, they are thinking of AI algorithms that look at the patient data, such as genetic information, medical history, real-time physiological data, that can be put together and understood and analyzed to then come up with an optimized drug delivery system, so an optimized cure. Or again, if you can, as already mentioned, if you can automate certain tasks, then you will free healthcare professional times, and they will focus on what is really relevant for them, the complex decision making. The AI can help diagnosis images. It will be the resolution, the AI helps in improving resolutions, and improving resolution means to see better, understand better, diagnose better, and ultimately intervene faster and more targeted manner. Or what if they are thinking everybody in the world will be able to go around with the AI smart device? Some already are doing this, wearable AI devices that take your data in real time and then can alert both the users and the healthcare provider and understand better the risks and how actually to minimize them. So with this, I'm just saying, yes, it's true, AI is going to change our world. Probably AI has already changed our world without us even fully recognize this. But what comes next? Well, the next part is a demanding part, because AI needs ethical regulations and laws. AI comes with great power, and as usual, with great power comes also great responsibilities. I will not deny by any circumstances that there are risks, and they are very important risks. There can always be bad actors that they are misusing AIs. They can always use it to manipulate people, to misinform people, creating fakes, breaching privacy. There can be lack of transparencies. There are AI bias that we need to deal with. And these are all risks that they are there, that partially we are already seeing it. So we need to do something. And actually, I'm very, very happy to say that the European Union is leading this regulatory initiative. They already have a document where they want to put in place a regulation of the AI that they are going to present in 2024. So we need laws, we need regulations, because This is part of human history. We can go throughout any invention, any discovery, and for each one of them, we have an amazing, beautiful applications, but we will always have also a very bad one, because I am afraid, without being, I think, too philosophical, this is a bit also the human nature. So this reflects human nature. So with this, I hope that I have given you some ideas for discussions, and I want to thank you for your attention. Ich will auch danke Ihnen für diese Opportunität. Mein Deutsch ist nicht gut genug. Und ich kann nicht eine ganze Diskussion und Präsentation auf Deutsch machen. Aber ich hoffe, dass Englisch ist auch gut. So, vielen Dank.
Englisch ist definitely good, right?
Yes, yes. Thank you so much for this presentation. We're going to start with some questions, and then please, if any of you wants to chip in or has something that you want to ask or comment on, please let us know. All right, I'm going to start. So you gave us a great overview over the history and kind of different application contexts of AI. So I was wondering, what's one of the application fields that you are most excited about, and then also what's an area where you think that we see a lot of hype currently and where the expectations might be a bit overstated?
Well, in my personal view, I think that there is a lot of hype and fear because there is a lot of misinformation. I mean, if rather than clarifying and explaining to people what artificial intelligence is, it's not really an artificial, it's not even an intelligence. It's just, it's a machine that still does what we tell the machines to do. So I think that much of the hype and the fear is due to the unknown, as usual. Again, this is a human nature, but it's also due to the fact that we don't explain in clear and understandable terms what this entire business is about and what we are trying to do and why it might be useful for us. I was mentioning briefly in my presentation about the Industrial Revolution. I mean, do we have an idea of what kind of unhealthy jobs these people were having because nothing was automated and they had to do everything by hand in the worst condition or worst situation? Of course, the times have changed, so I fully see that. But I still believe that there is too much misinformation and too much crazy talks, allow me to say this, too much crazy talks that simply people don't understand anymore what we are talking about.
Yep. So when you said, that a lot of jobs got lost in industrialization, so I don't know, so for people who are afraid now of losing their jobs because AI could step in. Do you have something in mind, or do you have ideas what kind of new jobs will be? I mean, as a person also working a little bit in machine learning, I know there is a job called data labeler, and it's not a job I would like to have. I don't think that's really the bright new future if many people are going to work as data labeler. So, but from this perspective, where do you see here hope for more jobs, more interesting jobs, or
I mean, I totally see the problem there, and this is why I also mentioned in the presentation. I do see that unfortunately, the generation that lives the transition
will be the one that will suffer a little bit, because you, not everybody will be willing to acquire new skills, or not only willing, but maybe not everybody will be able to acquire new skills. And so I don't try to minimize the impact at all. I do realize that for certain people, this will be will have a huge impact. The thing is that we have to, in a way, be a bit fatalistic and accept the fact that I don't think we can go back. It's as simple as that. I don't think we can stop. With my example, I only wanted to show we are living in an AI-driven world right now and since decades, and jobs have been changing already. Of course, the new skills that they are needed are of course technical skills, computer-related kind of skills, and at least from my perspective, this is what I see. And I'm not even saying that at a certain point there will not be still some sort of a routine kind of jobs for us, even though there is a AI involved. But the world is evolving, and unfortunately, I don't think you can stop it. Whether we like it or not, we cannot stop it. What we have to be very careful, though, in my personal opinion, is not to lose the focus of teaching our young people to have critical thinking. Because the danger that I see is that with this ChatGPT, all these chatbots and these kind of things, these tools are by no means precise, by no means they tell you always the correct information, but the problem is that they require knowledge from the user. So if you are not knowledgeable of what you are, or if you don't have a certain understanding and a certain knowledge, the answers to the question that you pose to these tools can be completely wrong. And if you do not teach our new generation to be critical, to ask questions, to not accept anything for granted, and always wanting to go deeper and understand better, we risk to create a generation of that lives in a fake reality in the end, because you believe in something that actually is basically wrong. I don't know if it's clear what I'm trying to say, otherwise I can explain better or try to explain it better.
I think it is. I do want to push back though a little bit and ask, well, the way that you've been presenting kind of, you know, the latest technical developments, and it's this unstoppable force and it's already here and all we can do is adapt. If I'm playing devil's advocate, it's also a position that's very much being taken by big technology companies that say, well, you know, it's already happening, so you might as well adapt. So I was wondering, with all these big technical revolutions, there was also always, you know, civil society that played a very active role when it came to either protesting or organizing or kind of trying to shape what this revolution will look like. So right now, what we've heard so far was very much kind of the technical advances, and then, well, the way that we can mitigate the harmful effects is, one, we educate citizens and we educate like children, and then also we need to have very strong laws and we need to have regulations. But I'm wondering, what can be the role in of society and maybe of activists in also shaping this development? Or do you not really see one?
Well, this is a difficult, an important question, but still is a difficult question, because the way I see it, I always, my starting point is what I know and what I do in my daily life. The point is that this artificial intelligence business has grown already exponentially. Now there is a race between big companies to actually build super duper compute structure infrastructure to do this AI. The thing that I see it as a big risk that nobody is actually grabbed and nobody is complaining about is that these big companies are actually making money by using public data. And this, I think, is a big issue, but nobody, not a single one, is complaining, is yelling, is shouting about this. Activists, they are not doing anything. We allow big private companies to use public data to make money. Why is that? Why no one's complaining? Why are we happy to give all our information, all our data to Google, whatever? ChatGPT tells you, whatever you tell me becomes my property, not ChatGPT, but Microsoft or whatever is behind it. So I think there are certain aspects. Again, please do understand, I'm not the expert. So this is what I try to follow a lot of the discussions that are ongoing in this field, and I fully agree with the fact that this is a big issue, but nobody seems to really pay attention and to really complain about this.
From which side would you expect here action or counteraction? So would it be the people who donate, or should it be more kind of politics for the law, or researchers, others, or who from which side would you expect most here?
I think that there is really a very, very urgent need for laws and regulation to really put a stop to all this and say, guys, we need to really think what we are doing and how we are doing it, and not allow this wild world to do whatever they want, basically. So I think one side is for sure our politicians, the regulators, and the lawmakers. That's true. But also we users, we need to be aware of what we are doing. We need to be aware of how we use all this infrastructure and all these tools. We are becoming robots, but in the worst sense, because we do things just automatically without asking ourselves, why, what are we doing? What are the consequences of what I'm doing? What are the consequences of telling Facebook every second where I'm going, where I am, what I'm doing, who I meet? I don't want to shift the responsibility on users, but users have to be conscious of what they are doing.
I agree. So, and I think it's a very difficult point here. And I would like to hear actually your opinion. So it's easy to say, well, no one is forced to use Facebook, or no one is forced to use whatever. But in nowadays life, it's quite difficult if you're not using this. I mean, I can tell you from my private, normal life, so I'm not using WhatsApp for all these reasons. Because there is relatively an easy way out. There is 3 months Signal, right? And Signal is even for free. But for some of my friends, that's a showstopper. They say, oh, I have one app on my phone, and that's enough. And if you're not there, then I'm not texting you anymore. And I was like, what? So telling that people need to be aware with whom or where they share the data is kind of simple, even though I think they should be. But on the other hand, making a law and say, well, it's not allowed to use WhatsApp anymore is, I don't know if this would lead to the target as well. So we cannot forbid everything. So it's very difficult to balance this.
Well, I do agree with you. I mean, if you don't use all these apps, you basically sometimes you can't do anything. I mean, nowadays you can even book an hotel without having an app or the things like this.
Exactly.
So I do see that it's difficult to live in a world that is AI driven and not using all these facilitators, let's call it like that, all these tools and all these things. But the bottom line is, we have to be conscious of what we are doing. We have to understand that what we are doing have consequences. I agree with you. It's a bit, I mean, it's an easy answer in a way, if you want. But I these are the instruments that we have as a human beings. We have regulations, we have laws that allow us to do or not do certain things. And in a way, I think that That's the way to go. We need to regulate what is allowed, what is not allowed. We need to regulate how our data are used. We need to regulate how our data are used so that these companies do not make money out of those. Or maybe they make money, but not a huge profit at the expenses of public data. This is my point. I'm sorry, I don't have a smarter answer for you. I don't know. I wouldn't know. I would have to think what are the other possible approaches and possible aspects. But awareness and understanding what we are doing is definitely important. Not us, maybe our generation still has a critical approach to these things. But I'm afraid that the younger the people, because they are born in this, they were born in this world, and they don't know a different world. They don't consciously understand what are they doing when they share every aspect of their life with these tools, with this artificial intelligence.
I mean, maybe one thing that we could also think about is that, again, coming back to this potential role of civil society or activists, I think one of the big problems is also that we often lack alternatives, in the sense that we can't even, the way that we envision, for example, a digital future is so heavily shaped by the corporate narratives, because there aren't really a lot of attractive alternatives. And one of my favorite examples was this case in Barcelona a couple of years ago, where there was kind of a project that emerged out of the activist scene, where they ended up actually having government support, where they tried to create a new system where companies that were using public data and or collecting data about the public had to kind of return the data that they collected to the city. So that then people could democratically choose what they wanted to do, and that you could actually use these insights to improve public life. But these are extremely, and they're trying to do a similar thing in Hamburg right now, but these are such small and kind of niche initiatives, and they're often also supported by the same individuals. So that I also think that's probably something that we should really try and just push much more.
Yeah, Roberta, but this is the point of our society. Unfortunately, we are not longer driven for the well-being of human beings, but we are driven by big corporate companies making money. I mean, I'm sorry, I say something that is obvious, but this is exactly the point. We should the alternative that we have is to not accept everything, no matter what, and try to really expect from our politicians, from our lawmakers, that there is a regulation and that we are not simply forced to go in a direction because big companies have to make money out of this. And also, please remember that this machine learning, AI, okay, machine learning, because I, from my point of view, is always machine learning, it's never AI, but this AI business requires an enormous, enormous amount of compute resources, enormous. You know the impact of the this enormous amount of compute resources on the environment.
Yep.
Because we are not talking about Swiss National Supercomputer Center and the machine that the Swiss National Supercomputer Center puts on the floor. That's, this is not what we are talking here. We are really talking about huge compute power that will have an impact. Without this huge compute power, there is no training of the in the machine learning. There is no data, because the enormous amount of data require also enormous compute power to analyze, to find patterns and everything that machine learning requires. So I think it's an oversimplification to say that everything, I mean, of course, these companies have enough money that they can build the huge facilities in the desert, and nobody really realized that they are there and that there is an impact and that they are consuming power. This is also the other aspect of the business. And again, I'm not talking about single machine that Switzerland put on the ground, but I'm talking about really big compute facilities. I mean, facilities that probably would need a power plant, a dedicated power plant to power them. In the United States, this is not an unknown thing. Huh? There are certain big labs that they have their own specific power supplier. Dedicated, not specific, sorry, dedicated power supply.
So now, when you kind of made your own or our own supercomputing center a bit smaller than it actually might be. So I still wonder, and actually I was thinking all about this all the time, so where can then Switzerland make an impact? Or why does it make sense for Switzerland, for the government, for universities and so on, to invest in AI if we're such a small country and we're fighting big players like Google, Apple, Amazon and all them, and they have so much more money, so much more compute power and so on. So where does it make sense, or where do you see also the purpose of the Swiss National Supercompute Center?
Thank you. This is actually a very important question, and thank you for asking it, because I wouldn't want to give the wrong impression. First of all, Switzerland by no means is competing with this big corporate world, because this is not what we are doing. We don't have the resources, we don't have the power. I mean, there is no comparison. But with our infrastructure, what Switzerland is trying to do is to lead the direction that AI is taking. So basically, because Switzerland, as you said correctly, is a small country, and because Switzerland doesn't really have a lot of resources that they can use, Switzerland has always invested in innovation technologies and has always tried to have a leading role in the development, in the direction that this innovation is taking. And I think that this is exactly the role that Switzerland is taking. So Switzerland does not want to compete with the big corporate worlds, and it by no means wants to put an infrastructure that can solve the AI for the world. What we are trying to do is to put there an infrastructure that will help Switzerland being in the leading role of where AI is going and the direction that it's taking. I know that might seem like a big thing, but I mean, Switzerland has always had this role also in high performance computing. We are small, but we are really playing a leading role. And we want to do something similar with the artificial intelligence. So really be there, be present, but to steer the development and the direction that artificial intelligence is taking in a sensible, what Switzerland think is a sensible direction. There is a guidelines that has been provided by the Federation actually on how AI should develop. And I really recommend all the people that they are interested to read these guidelines. It's not very long document, but it's very interesting actually to have a look at it.
Could you maybe tell us a bit more about the specific work that the center is doing and what might be, you know, some of the innovative parts of it? Is it just the fact that it exists, or what do you think makes it so special?
Sorry, Roberta, I didn't fully understand. Can you repeat your question?
Yes. So basically, you know, when you were talking about the role that Switzerland can take, you said, well, we're doing all this, like Switzerland, again, is investing in this very innovative technology, and it should assume a leading role. And so I was wondering, you know, what are some of the project, or what is some of the work that the center is doing that you find particularly innovative? Is it the fact that the center exists and kind of that Switzerland has this national project that invests into AI? Or are there some more concrete applications or projects that you could tell us about?
So, first thing, the Swiss National Supercomputing Center existed as a high performance in his role as the leading infrastructure for high performance computing. So these are very powerful scientific calculations that are now used in many disciplines. And the fact that we were changing the compute infrastructure and going more towards this AI infrastructure has been due to some very important use cases that we had in mind. So we have not simply gone in a different direction because we were bored with what we were doing before. But there is one of our use cases that has convinced us that this was the direction to go is, of course, everybody has heard the climate change problem. So basically, climate is in need of and the climatologists really now have to make an effort to really be able to recreate virtually what they call the digital twin of the Earth, so that they can understand actually how the climate is evolving and how it's moving. Now, the explanation, the creating a digital twin seems an easy thing to do, but actually they still have to work on the model. But the other problem is that they will produce an enormous amount of data. Enormous amount of data. So we talk about petabyte of data per day. So it's really something enormous. And so with this idea in mind that we need to understand how we can intervene in this world where the climate is changing. I mean, we are seeing the consequences. Middle of October, it looked like summer. It was 30 degrees also in Zurich. I was in Zurich. We were still swimming in the lake. I mean, and this is really something that can be nice maybe for if it happens once, but if the climate is changing, and this will have enormous consequences. So one of our driving use cases has been the climate, because we really you have to know that Switzerland is very strong in the weather and climate, And because also of our long-term collaboration with Meteo Suisse, because we are also offering the infrastructure for Meteo Suisse, this has been one of the use cases that has been driven the direction of going towards this big new Alps infrastructure, where data is the central part. And this is what AI means for us. So is how to deal with the data flow, and so applying machine learning to the climate data. So this has been the driving force to build this new infrastructure. I hope that I answer more your question.
Yeah, I mean, that was really fascinating. Do you have some more open questions, or should we open the...
Yeah, we can. I actually have one, but I guess that's anyways one question you don't want to have recorded in the end, so we push this question to the part afterwards. So then we stop here for the live stream and the recording part.
Would you please continue to be online?
Just want to announce when we meet the next time here for the next Netzpolitische Abend, that's in roughly 1 month, on November 23rd. Hopefully then also is the guest live here. It's going to be Gerhard André, who is then likely still to be a Nationalrat. We will find out next weekend. And we are talking with him about digitale Souveränität. And then another event I want to advertises the Winter Congress, so the largest gathering of Digitale Gesellschaft in the Schweiz. So this will be on Friday and Saturday, 1st and 2nd of March. Then we are at the moment, we are running a crowdfunding campaign to collect money for all our law cases which are ongoing. So as an example, I'm not sure if... But it would be the correct English word, so I'm saying it in German. So things like Kabelaufklärung oder Vorratsdatenspeicherung, which we are fighting on the lawsuit case against them, which are one of them is even now at the stage of the European court. So they are costing a lot of money if you want to support them. So now is the time to support our crowdfunding campaign to support these and other law cases where we as Digitale Gesellschaft are fighting at the moment. And for people which are new here, so there is a whole long list of ways how you can stay connected with us as Digitale Gesellschaft. So the QR code will send you directly to the page where you can register for a newsletter, which shows up once per month. People who like to listen instead of read, I can recommend the Netz podcast. And then we have on many better and less good social media channels a presence. So here is Mastodon, Instagram, and the former Twitter linked mentioned, but we are also available or on others. Well, and if you want to become a member, then this is the way to do it. digiges.ch/ich-mache-mit. So I'm joining, basically, on German. We are happy of every active and passive member, whoever is part of the new digital society. Well, in one or the other case, you're anyways, because the society is becoming digital. But yeah, that's it. So then, I want to say goodbye for the online audience. Thank you for watching. And of course, thank you, Roberto, to joining the team today, and I hope you're not just today here, you will be on further Netzpolitische Abend here. And last but definitely not least, thank you very much, Maria Grazia, for being with us tonight. Thanks.
Thank you very much, and thank you again for allowing English to be in English.